Welcome to A-Level Unlocked, the podcast that gets you exam ready one topic at a time. I'm your host, and today we're diving deep into one of the most fascinating and debated arguments in the philosophy of religion, the teleological argument, also known as the design argument, for the existence of God. Whether you're studying for your WJEC A-Level Religious Studies exam or just love big philosophical questions, this episode is for you. Grab a pen because there's a lot to cover. And by the end, you'll be ready to tackle any question the examiner throws at you. Let's start with the basics. The word teleological comes from the Greek word telos, meaning purpose or end. So the teleological argument is essentially this: the universe appears to have purpose and order, and that purpose and order points to an intelligent designer, namely God. It's an a posteriori argument, meaning it's based on observation and experience of the world around us, not pure logic alone. And it's inductive, meaning it draws a probable conclusion rather than a certain one. Keep those two terms, a posteriori and inductive, in your mind. Examiners love to see them used correctly. Now let's walk through the three key thinkers you absolutely must know for W.J.H. Aquinas, Paley, and Tennent. First up, St. Thomas Aquinas. Writing in the 13th century in his monumental work, Summa Theologica, Aquinas presented what he called the fifth way, the argument from the governance of things. Here's the core idea. Aquinas observed that natural objects, things like plants, animals, even rocks, behave in regular, purposeful ways. They act towards an end, as he put it. A plant grows towards light. A bird builds a nest. These things lack intelligence. They cannot consciously direct themselves, yet they consistently act in ways that achieve beneficial outcomes. Aquinas argued that this cannot happen by chance. Something without intelligence cannot move towards a goal unless it is directed by something that does possess intelligence. His famous analogy is the archer and the arrow. An arrow cannot fly towards a target by itself. It requires an archer to direct it. In the same way, non-rational natural objects require an intelligent being to direct them towards their ends. That intelligent being, Aquinas concluded, is what we call God. When you write about Aquinas in your exam, make sure you use the phrase governance of things and explicitly explain the archer analogy. Examiners award credit specifically for this. Now let's move forward to 1802 and the work of William Paley. In his book Natural Theology, Paley developed the most famous version of the design argument, the watchmaker analogy. Imagine, Paley says, that you are walking across a heath and you kick a stone. You might think nothing of it. It's just a stone. It could have been there forever. But now imagine you find a watch lying on the ground. You pick it up, open it, and see all these intricate gears, springs, and mechanisms working together with extraordinary precision to tell the time. You would never conclude that this watch had always existed or had come together by chance. The complexity and purposefulness of the watch's design demands an explanation. It demands a watchmaker. Paley then extends this analogy to the natural world. Look at the human eye. It has a lens, a retina, muscles that adjust focus, a system for processing light into signals, all working together for the purpose of sight. This complexity and purpose, Paley argues, is far greater than any watch. Therefore, just as a watch demands a watchmaker, the natural world demands a divine designer. Paley actually made two distinct arguments within this framework, and WJHE examiners specifically reward candidates who distinguish between them. The first is design qua purpose. Qua, meaning in terms of, this refers to the complexity of individual organisms and organs, like the eye, that appear designed for a specific purpose. The second is design qua regularity. This refers to the orderly, law-governed behavior of the universe as a whole, like the regular rotation of planets and the consistency of natural laws. Both point to design, but in different ways. Don't confuse them, and don't forget to name them with the Latin terms. Now let's jump to the 20th century and F.R. Tennent. Writing in his Philosophical Theology in 1930, Tennent updated the design argument to engage with modern science. He proposed two key principles. The first is the anthropic principle. Tennent pointed out that the universe is extraordinarily fine-tuned to support intelligent life. The physical constants, things like the gravitational constant, the speed of light, the charge of an electron, are set at precisely the values needed for stars, planets, and ultimately life to exist. If any of these constants were even slightly different, the universe would be sterile. This is sometimes called the Goldilocks zone. Conditions are just right for life. The probability of this happening by chance, Tennent argued, is so astronomically small that it points to intentional design. The second principle is the aesthetic principle. Tennant observed that humans have a capacity to appreciate beauty in art, music, nature, mathematics, that goes far beyond what is needed for mere survival. Natural selection can explain adaptations that help us survive, but it cannot explain why we find a sunset beautiful or why music moves us to tears. This capacity for aesthetic appreciation, Tennant argued, suggests a God who not only designed the universe, but who values and shares in beauty. Make sure you can clearly distinguish these two principles. They are a very common source of confusion, and examiners specifically credit candidates who get them right. All right, we've covered the three main proponents. Now let's turn to the challenges, and these are just as important for your AO2 marks. The most significant philosophical challenge comes from David Hume, who wrote his Dialogues Concerning Natural Religion in 1779, actually published after his death. Hume attacked the design argument from multiple angles. His most powerful critique targets the use of analogy. Paley's argument works by saying, "The universe is like a watch, therefore it has a designer like a watchmaker." But Hume asks, "Is the universe really like a watch?" A watch is a human artifact. We have direct experience of watches being made by watchmakers, but we have no experience of universes being made. We only have this one universe. The analogy is therefore very weak. Hume also raises what's called the fallacy of composition. Just because individual parts of the universe appear designed doesn't mean the universe as a whole is designed. The parts of a machine are made of metal, but that doesn't mean the machine itself is made of metal in the same sense. Similarly, individual complex things might have designers without the universe as a whole requiring one. Hume also raises the Epicurean hypothesis, the idea that given infinite time, matter in random motion would eventually produce an ordered arrangement by chance. What we observe might simply be the result of a long process of trial and error, not design. And finally, Hume points out that even if we accept the argument, it only proves a designer, not necessarily the all-powerful, all-knowing, perfectly good God of Christianity. The designer could be limited, imperfect, or even a committee of designers. The second major challenge is Darwinian evolution. In 1859, Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species, which provided a powerful alternative explanation for the apparent design in living organisms. Darwin showed that, through the mechanism of random mutation and natural selection, complex, purposeful-seeming organisms can arise without any designer. A random mutation that helps an organism survive is more likely to be passed on to offspring. Over millions of generations, this process produces extraordinary complexity and apparent purpose, like the eye, without any intelligent direction. This is a direct challenge to Paley's design qua purpose argument. If natural selection can explain the eye, we don't need God to explain it. However, and this is important for high-level AO2 responses, Darwin's theory doesn't necessarily destroy all forms of the design argument. Tennant's anthropic principle, for instance, asks not why organisms are complex, but why the universe has the precise physical constants needed for life and evolution to occur at all. And some theologians, like Richard Swinburne, argue for theistic evolution, the view that God designed the process of evolution itself as the mechanism for creating life. This is a much more sophisticated position than simply saying evolution disproves God. Now, let's talk exam technique, because this is where marks are won and lost. For AO1 questions, the explain or outline questions, you need to demonstrate accurate, detailed knowledge. The WJEC mark scheme rewards candidates who use precise technical vocabulary, teleological, a posteriori, inductive, design qua purpose, design qua regularity, anthropic principle, aesthetic principle, natural selection. Don't just list these words, use them correctly in context. For Aquinas, always include the archer analogy and the phrase governance of things. For Paley, always distinguish between the two types of design. For Tennant, always distinguish between the anthropic and aesthetic principles. Examiners are specifically looking for these distinctions. For AO2 questions, the evaluation questions, you need to construct a sustained, coherent argument. The most common mistake candidates make is what I call the list of criticisms approach, just listing Hume's objections one after another without engaging with them critically. High-level responses do something different. They apply Hume's specific arguments, the fallacy of composition, the Epicurean hypothesis, to the specific mechanics of the watchmaker analogy. They consider whether Darwin's theory actually defeats the argument or whether theistic evolution offers a response. They reach a clear, justified conclusion. Don't sit on the fence. examiners reward candidates who commit to a position and defend it well.
A common mistake to avoid. Do not confuse the teleological argument with the cosmological argument. The cosmological argument is about causation and the origin of the universe. It asks, why is there something rather than nothing? The teleological argument is about purpose and order. It asks, why does the universe appear designed? They are related but distinct. Another mistake. Don't present Paley's argument as a proof. It is an inductive argument. It concludes that design is probable, not certain.
Now for our quickfire recall quiz, I'll ask the questions. You try to answer before I give the answer. Ready? Question 1. What is the name of Aquinas's argument for design, and in which work does it appear? Answer. The Fifth Way from Summa Theologica. Question 2. What are Paley's two types of design argument? Answer. Design qua purpose and design qua regularity. Question 3. What is the difference between Tennant's anthropic principle and his aesthetic principle? Answer. The anthropic principle concerns the fine-tuned physical conditions for life. The aesthetic principle concerns human appreciation of beauty beyond survival needs. Question 4. Name two specific logical criticisms Hume makes of the design argument. Answer. The fallacy of composition and the Epicurean hypothesis, or the weakness of the analogy between the universe and a human artifact. Question 5. How does Darwin's theory of natural selection challenge Paley specifically? Answer. It provides a non-design mechanism, random mutation and natural selection, that can explain the apparent purpose and complexity of organisms like the eye, making a designer unnecessary. Let's wrap up. The teleological argument is one of the most enduring and debated arguments in philosophy of religion. From Aquinas' medieval archer to Paley's watchmaker to Tennant's fine-tuned universe, thinkers across centuries have looked at the world and seen evidence of a divine designer. Hume and Darwin offer powerful challenges, but the argument continues to evolve in response. For your WJETSE exam, remember, AO1 is about accurate, detailed knowledge with precise vocabulary. AO2 is about sustained, critical evaluation with a clear conclusion.
Use the technical terms. Distinguish between the thinkers. Apply Hume's specific arguments to specific versions of the design argument, and engage seriously with the Darwin challenge. Do that, and you'll be in the top band.
Thanks for listening to A-Level Unlocked. Good luck in your exam. You've got this.